The Third Great Conference, Lecture 20, the Hebrew Scriptures. What I want to talk about here is the structure that we can apply to these many, many stories to help give them some form that we can take hold of that will make our teaching more effective and efficient at the same time. And I also want to place these stories to a certain extent in a chronological order and also to place them in something of a context period. Now, the first part, the structuring, is absolutely necessary for you as a teacher. The chronological and contextual aspects of it, I am bringing especially again knowing that even perhaps if you did learn these stories in Sunday school or Hebrew school, they were probably given to you in something of a vacuum, as though nothing else was going on in the world at that time, except that there were people against whom the ancient Hebrews had to fight. But it's good for you as a Waldorf teacher, someone who is hopefully representing culture and civilization in the widest sense to your children, it's good for you to have some sense every year of when and where and in what setting the stories that you're teaching occurred and what they had to do with everything else going on in the world, which perhaps some of which you've already taught, some of which you will teach. So this is trying to place this a bit in context. You're not going to share any of this with the children. You certainly should not show them a map of ancient Israel on the board. You want to give them an idea perhaps how people may have dressed in those times. But on the whole, you're telling the story to the children as something quite independent of time and space, like the fairy tale. When did it happen? When did it not happen? But for you now, as you're bringing the children more and more into the world of geography in grade 4, into the world of chronology in grades 5 and 6, it's good for you to start to see it in this regard. So I have attached as resources PDFs of a couple of timelines, and you can look at them in detail. I just want to give you some ideas about the relative importance of one or another event here. So you can, if you wish, before you listen to the rest of this, if you want to download those PDFs and look along with me, or just listen right now and look at them later, but you need not take notes on this because all of the information is available. Right now, I am referring to what is called the Old Testament timeline by Matthew McGee. So let's look at the sort of most important events that we will encounter, the things, among others, that we will be teaching to the children in grade 3. Creation, year 0 from creation, and that is, again, according to modern Judaic scholarly calculation, accounted to be about 4000 BC. So here we have a time in which already in ancient Egypt, cultural impulses are beginning to arise. In ancient India, culture is very, very far along. And this is accounted to be, in one form or another, where the world begins for the ancient Hebrews. So we can see that chronology in this respect is pretty impossible. The birth of Noah is accounted to be somewhere in the vicinity of 3000 BC or BCE. That is to say, the age in which Egyptian culture begins, pure and simple. And Yet this is also accounted to be the time of the flood in the year 2294. We can see that Noah lived to a very advanced age. And Noah leaves the ark then 2293. Now remember, this is all very, very approximate when we go back this far. But just to show us, so this is the flood is accounted to be about 1,700 years after the world is created. God, Yahweh, has second thoughts. And then to go on to, for our context, the next most important event, the birth of Abraham. Again, approximately 2000 BCE. Now, let's just pause for a moment. Steiner tells us that what he calls the mystery of Golgotha, that is the crucifixion of Jesus on the cross, the passing of the Christ being out of his body, that this should be thought of as the fulcrum of earth evolution, so that there is a consonance, there is a harmony, there is a balancing possibility between events that occurred before that time and events that occurred after it, but not in a linear way, rather in the way of a seesaw or a lever, that the year zero, or rather 33 AD approximately, is the fulcrum, and events that occurred right before that are balanced by events that occurred right after. Things that occurred 100 years before that can seek a balance in what happened approximately 70 or 80 AD. Now look at this. We see the birth of Abraham, the beginning of consciousness as we know it in the Western world. It is the year 2000 BCE. What would be its counterbalance? Approximately about the year 1966 AD. The 60s. Very interesting, isn't it? If we go back a little bit further, we see that the events between Noah and Abraham really are counterbalanced by our time. That is to say that our time has a certain mission, has a tendency towards counterbalancing the events in this very distant age, the events which came before the time that Yahweh decided the earth needed to be destroyed, and following that, the time in which Abraham, progenitor of the world as we know it, came into being. So as you look at these numbers, BCE, think of them in their mirror image of AD as well. And then we go on, other important events for us, the births of Ishmael and Isaac between approximately 1915 BC, 1901 BC, counterbalance for the early 20th century, that time of great change and transformation. The birth of Jacob, the birth of Joseph. So now these are coming with greater rapidity. And now we're coming into a time when records are kept in a certain way, not necessarily documents, but at least temple inscriptions and monuments. And now we have the death of Joseph, 1640 BC, and nearly 100 years later than the birth of Moses, 1576 BC. We could say the counterbalance for this is the height of the Renaissance, which you will be studying in grade 7. The Exodus from Egypt, 1496 BC. Its counterbalance, the beginning of the age of exploration in the Western world. The crossing of the Jordan, 1456 BC. the judges begin leading Israel in 1426 BC. We will see as we look at the structure of the main lesson of the way in which we teach these stories, how important this moment is when the judges begin leading Israel. Saul, the first king, begins his reign in 1100 BC. David in 1060. Solomon begins to rule in 1020. And the temple is built, or at least begun, round about 1000 BC. Once again, turn that around. What's going on 1000 AD? We have the impulses that are going to be manifesting before too long in the Knights Templars, in those who want to rebuild the temple in a very new way. And then we can go on from this point and see then, as we go into the 900s, 800s BC, we have a long list of kings, most of whom you will probably not teach. The important thing is Saul, David, and Solomon. However, you will teach figures who were not ruling Israel at that time, who in many ways at times were even completely alienated or exiled from the lands of the Israelites, and these are the prophets. So it's the prophets who are teaching and preaching in these times, as we go into especially the 9th century and the 8th century BC. And now let's switch over and look at the timeline that begins Old Testament 800 BCE to year zero. And this one is very helpful because it puts everything in a context. So we can see that while those prophets are speaking, and they may very well be the last figures that you are teaching at the very end of third grade, the Greek city-states are beginning to arise in seed form in the Aegean and around the Mediterranean. Not terribly far, really, in the larger picture of the world from the Israelites, but worlds away in consciousness and development. The Olympic Games are arising while Israel goes through a state of great prosperity under King Jeroboam. And then we see the, they mention here when, possibly various books of the Hebrew Scriptures were written. And now we go on and see how at the time that the Proverbs were first written, at the time of the first priestly documents, at the time of the Assyrian conquest, round about 700 BC, of the land of Judah, Judea, the land of the Israelites, we see now Greek culture starting to take hold and starting to appear in one way or another in parallel and yet quite different directions from all that was going on among the Israelites. If you look, for example, the year of 622, the law of Moses, that is to say, the Ten Commandments and all else that comes out of Leviticus, was discovered in the temple at Jerusalem. And not much longer after that, Dracon introduces Athens' first written laws, the Draconian laws. To this day, that's an expression used when laws are very strict, very harsh, not unlike the Ten Commandments in certain ways. We see Zoroaster mentioned, or Zarathustra, at the bottom of the page. You'll be talking about him in grade 5 as well. The adoption of a new kind of prayer by priests in ancient India. Aesop, possibly a legend, probably real, living at this time as well. as the prophets are still speaking their words to the Israelites. So look at these, and it starts to give you a picture. Once again, some of it, especially if you go before 800 BCE, terribly approximate, but also very important for us to see how the Israelites, though living quite apart, carefully separated from other peoples by Yahweh, nonetheless, there's something there that is making itself ready for the great synthesis between the life of the Israelites and their beliefs and the philosophical stream of the ancient Greeks, something that will only occur in the time of St. Paul in years to come. But this is a good thing to look at, especially if all of this is new to you. I hope that these timelines can be helpful, and I'll be bringing in other aspects of this as well. So now we're going to look at, in our next lecture, the threefold structure of the Hebrew Scriptures, and then we will go into step-by-step specific stories and ways to present it.